You're listening to the Pitch Invaders podcast presented by Papagayo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. And now, your hosts, Tom Quinlan, Brian Speaks, and Will Blissini.
Yo, Will Blissini. Got a freestyle on the top of his head. Gonna go off. Yeah. Throwback Thursday. Yeah. Go.
I ain't gonna freestyle cause my words are full of guile. I ain't gonna be sick cause I'm rapping Papagayos. Everybody know they. I'm sorry, I can't freestyle because I just look to my left and I see the ginger beer just go down with laughter. and it throws off the whole vibe and the rhythm. It kills me. I love it.
I just love how you were freestyling and you threw the sponsor in there. That's so perfect.
Of course, I had to. Do you know what else is perfect, though? Can we mention Brian Speaks got a haircut?
He did.
So bad. I'm not even.
He doesn't want to take his hair off.
No,
hat off.
He says it's so bad, but I say it's so good.
I went for a European, like, hooligan hipster look, and it's off, like, it's so.
Look at him.
It's so bad.
He's awesome.
It's so glorious.
Hold on.
It's so glorious, though.
It's so bad.
Ladies and gentlemen, trust me.
He's
as
got
an
his
expert
playoff
in
haircut ready.
It's so bad.
As a swaggering expert. That is swaggable.
No, yeah,
my swag is not on deck right now.
No, he's got it.
No, you went 0 to 100.
I went back to 0 again. I mean, the haircut itself is fine. It, just on myself, it's not that great.
Jeff Lemieux joins us today as we prepare for Sunday.
Jeff.
Yep. Ready for playoffs back at Gillette, people?
Oh, my God. I'm ready for playoffs in D.C., but you guys can be ready for Gillette.
Will Blissini's getting his tickets booked for United, getting ready to see
No. My tickets are booked for when New England and New York do a home and away. First game will be in New York. Second game will be here in Boston. The second we beat D.C.,
we're playing in Boston now.
Purchasing
awesome.
The tickets.
Knew,
you know what?
I knew we'd get a soccer.
All right, I said that. I said that because I was dreaming. I saw that D.C. just are really close to getting their deal at a stadium at Buzzard Point for.
How close have they been now?
They're really close now. They just finished their actually cost-benefit analysis. The city is going to be paying for about half of it.
Really?
They're going to be paying for about the other half. So it looks like in the next 2 years. Probably within even the next year, they're going to start breaking ground on the stadium there in Buzzard Point, so congratulations to them. But it just got me dreaming of a stadium that's somewhere close to Boston, like maybe around where I live.
Like right outside
Newman.
These windows?
We'll just build
it
on
Boston,
the water?
I see Boston skyline. Let's just put it there.
No, you see the wharf.
Yeah, I do. There's something there.
Can we, you know, we'll talk soccer-specific stadium stuff.
You got a little confused there. We're talking about Spock now?
We're talking about soccer-specific stadiums, and then we'll get to Boston's eventually this summer.
What's Spock
saying
again?
Live long and prosper. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
All right. Living long and prospering is what MLS teams hope to do past this weekend, including New England, New York, L.A. and Seattle. Will they? We're going to talk about that right now. We're going to start with New York and D.C., though, because that's where Will just was alluding to. And Billiam, stop going nuts. Focus
I'm sorry,
now, William.
I'm sorry.
New
I'm
York.
Sorry. Neil Caswell is killing it right now on the Twitter.
How's
the Neil Twitter
feeling?
Sphere.
Neil
is feeling
good.
He just had to, quote, I had to walk out of my English class to laugh. ..
There's a lot.
Shit, Brian. Hashtag dead.
There is. If you want to join the conversation, at Podcast Invaders is where you can just see the shenanigans that's happening on this show right now. New York and DC in the second leg of the Eastern Conference semifinals. New York up 2-0.
Yep.
Is it
definitely
door closed? For the Eastern Conference champions, DC United.
Not at all. I mean, as much as I would love to admit to myself that, oh yeah, we're going to the finals. For the first time in what seems like forever, and when I mean forever, I mean close to forever. But the bottom line is that DC is historically the New York Red Bulls killer. They love to upset us. They love to piss us off. And they've made me cry many a nights. Many a nights after I turn off the TV and start squeezing glasses and breaking them. But this game was nowhere near over. We got two goals at home. That means absolutely, that means a lot, but going into RFK Stadium, DC plays pretty well at home, so expect them to fight for it. And you know what? Like I said before, I said it on Tuesday, this team is full of experienced players. Ben Olsen has been there. He's done it. He's won the cup himself. So they know exactly what they have to do to turn this result around. This game's not going to be easy. It's not going to be as straightforward as what I think New England versus Columbus is going to be this on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I mean, you have two good teams. I mean, it's not that the Revs and Columbus isn't two good teams going at it, but I think that between DC and New York, it's a real good matchup. I'm shocked that it went the way it did in Harrison. I didn't think it would go down that way at all.
Would you have thought that DC was going to at least take a tie?
I thought they could have at least put a point on the board. I mean,
yeah,
and then there's a total different situation. I mean, the away goals, we went over this on Tuesday, so important.
Like for
DC to miss that, and you're going to be proven wrong, Tom. This weekend, some team is going to lose solely based on away goals.
Dallas would be the only team.
Then they lose on away goals.
But
or you know what? It could be LA. What if RSL just gets themselves a goal? And they win 1-0, or they win 1-1 even, and they're on.
Yeah.
That away goal
is a huge advantage.
And then to my point the other day, Bruce Arena's a moron for playing that way that he did.
Then he's a moron.
I mean, you said it.
Yeah,
you
Brian said it was stupid. So it would have been a more.
He divined this.
I don't necessarily think that was the intention. I don't think that was the goal, was to sit back. And RSL just had answers. I didn't view it as LA just being like, oh, we'll get him in LA. If that's the case, then I said it. I don't view Bruce Arena as a stupid person. If that was his goal, the epitome of stupid, and if I'm an LA fan, I don't want him as my coach anymore. If you can't coach in the playoffs anymore, what good are you? Like, LA is a team that's going to make the playoffs 9 times out of 10 with the amount
of talent. Not going to, but they should. With the pedigree that they have, they should. It's almost like, you know, you think about a team like Manchester United. Like, when they're not in the top three, they're failing.
Keep it in MLS. Keep it in MLS. It's New York.
Miserable.
It should be New York. If New York's not in the playoffs, it's an absolute effing disgrace.
But it's different because New York Red Bulls doesn't have the success pedigree that LA
they
does.
They have the money.
The reason why I was comparing LA and Manchester
they
is because Manchester has the winning pedigree that they know that they should be in the top three. They should be in Europe. LA is the same thing. They know that they should be getting to the MLS Cup. They should be winning the West. They should be getting to the CCL. So anything that falls short of that is seen as a failure. And I do think, though, that with this new LA team coming in, with the amount of power and money that they're having, and the fact that a lot of LA's guys, Landon Donovan's on his way out, Robbie Keane could probably be leaving in the next season or two. So this team's really going to need to start revamping pretty quickly to go up against another LA team that's going to be trying to pull as many fans away from them as possible.
Still got two more years, though, before that actually happens. They're not coming in until 2017.
And if Giarcy's artist can continue to develop as he has from last year to this year, if you give him two more years, he's going to be on a level.
But where is he on the...
But will he even be here in this country, though? See, my fear is
here.
Like... the thing.
Yeah,
is,
he'll be here.
He's too inconsistent to go anywhere
else. I don't know. I mean, you know, we say that, but then again, last year I look at Jossie Zardes last year versus this year. Last year, the guy would cannonball shots up into the upper deck. He would miss opportunities by miles wide.
He had four
goals
in
13. This year, he's honed in. His consistency in putting the ball in the back of the net has skyrocketed tremendously. He's not sending balls into the upper decks. They're coming closer and closer in two seasons or next year. What if he's converting even more? And then the year up there, after that, he's converting even more. There's going to be a lot of European teams licking their chops to get this guy. So
right.
I don't know if he's a guarantee in 3 years when this new LA team.
If European teams are licking their chops, then, Wilf, to your point, something that you've said repeatedly, we have to keep our American talent here domestically, especially if it's a guy like Giassi Zardes.
There's a difference, though, between what I want and what actually happens. Like, I want him to stay more than I would love it if he spent his whole career here. But the bottom line is that a lot of guys in this country, they don't see, they're not like Landon Donovan, who has aspirations to stay here their entire career and try and build the league. They want to go to Europe. They want to go to these teams that they've been watching most of their lives. They
it's also on the other side of that. It's not Giassi Zardes's job necessarily to be, playing devil's advocate, it's not Giassi Zardes's job necessarily to build MLS.
I disagree. I think
Giassi Zardes's job is to win LA a title.
It's win LA a title, but the bottom line is that everyone that plays in the MLS is a representative of the MLS for both the world and for the American public.
Sure, they're fine. They go hand in hand with each other.
So they go hand in hand. You know, he can't, you know, he's not just going to be an LA title winner. He's also a representative for the sport in this country. So the bottom line is that he is going to be representing us, and I would love for him to stay, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Brian, where is Giassi Zardes in terms of the U.S. men's national team pool right now? Do you think he's on that upper echelon of players that we'll start seeing in the first team eventually, maybe in January? I don't think you're going to see any MLS guys that are currently playing in playoff mode go to camp in November. I don't think we're seeing Lee Wynn go to Jurgen's camp in a week here.
First of all, it is November.
Fine. I don't think we're seeing Lee Wynn go to Jurgen's camp in a week. Truly. It's fine. In a week here. It's not happening. So, in January, does Giassi Zardes, who another guy, not going to Jurgen's camp in a couple of weeks here, does he go in January, and where does he currently sit right now in the U.S. men's national team pool?
He's someone who definitely could go to the camp in January. I don't necessarily. I don't think he's going to break out on the national team yet. He's still young. He's still raw. He still is inconsistent. Yes, he's not skying the ball, you know, 35 yards over the net like he was last year. But he's still, you know,
he still has Landon Donovan, the greatest distributor in MLS all time, giving him the ball.
That's the first nice thing you've ever said about Landon Donovan.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. Jesus.
Wow.
This is a big moment for you, Tom. You might want to stand up and
keep
take
going.
A bow.
Right. Keep going.
Oh, do you want us to fluff your feathers a bit more?
But
I don't,
yes, if he goes to camp in January, deserved call up. I don't think he breaks out yet. Maybe the Gold Cup definitely could be, you know, a player of that caliber for the one coming up. Was it next year?
Yeah, Copa America coming up too around the corner.
Yeah, you're going to want your A-plus squad for that, though. That's going to be a big test for this U.S. team.
Giassi Zardes can't be in that your best 11, best 18 maybe.
He'd probably be in the best 23. I don't know if
you're not going to put after this World Cup. You're not putting Wondolowski there.
No, I mean
I wouldn't have put Wondolowski
though
in the last World Cup. So no.
See, here's the thing though about Giassi Zardes. In my mind, and especially with what I've seen with what the team that Jurgen has fielded ever since he's had tenure here, is that he tends to favor strikers from a European base. I don't think that he necessarily trusts strikers that play in the MLS to be that guy that you want to rely on an international stage. You know, he tried to put his faith in Wondolowski, who undoubtedly is one of the best MLS scoring strikers in our history. And he put him in those pressure situations, and he failed. You know, and then you put someone like Josie Altidore in it, who has that European experience, and no, he's not the MLS all-time scorer. He hasn't had the prolific scoring record that Wondolowski had here, but he has that European experience. So in my mind, coming up into the camps and on the future, until Giassi Zardes actually proves himself in Europe, then I don't think he's going to get a look from Jurgen Klinsmann. I think Jurgen's going to keep on going, more likely to go to someone like Bobby Wood, who's playing in Europe, striker, Josie Altidore.
Yeah, he went to Bobby Wood in the last.
I think that Giassi Zardes, even though he's playing better right now, he's not going to get that big of a look from Jurgen Klinsmann because he doesn't have that European pace.
And that is your unbiased opinion on it. Like that is your...
That's just what I've thought about because of the way that Jurgen has fielded our strikers in the past. Because if you think about it, the strikers that consistently get playing time for us are not necessarily the MLS ones, and the ones that also do it big for us on the international stage are not the MLS strikers. They're the European-based strikers.
And the only exception there really is Dempsey, but Dempsey played a lot of his career with Fulham and Tottenham, so he has what Jurgen's looking for.
He already had developed that European spice.
Brian, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, Giannis Zardes, I mean, I wasn't even really factoring Wood. I mean, if you're taking, what, you're going to take four?
Joe Gal.
You're going to take four strikers to the Copa America. Giannis Zardes isn't one, because you're going to take Altidore. You're going to take Aaron Johansson. Probably going to take Bobby Wood, and you're going to use Dempsey up top.
Yep.
For your, you know, center midfield, whatever. You know, so Zardes isn't going to break in yet, and it's fine. He's still young. Yeah, he doesn't need to break in now.
No, but you would like to see him get international competition play, at least. Get him a few caps.
And that's what the Gold Cup is a perfect opportunity for a player of his ability to do that. Perfect, he's not going to be part of your A-plus squad.
All right, let's look at the other, speaking of U.S. men's national team players, let's look at some Seattle and Dallas. That'll be a fascinating game on Saturday, is it? I think it is. Yep, Saturday. Are we banking that Seattle has got this done, or can Dallas pull the upset? And as we said before, I mean, they're going to need a 1-1 draw at the minimum to send it into overtime. If Dallas scores one and holds Seattle off the board, then it's going to be Dallas's day to move on in the dance. What do we think is going to happen in CenturyLink Field?
Well, first of all, Seattle-Dallas is Monday, by the way.
Yeah, Monday.
I just saw that, too. I'm sorry. My bad.
It's a Monday game. So I think that this game...
Monday. Why Monday? But go, fine. MLS schedule makers suck.
Monday at 10:30 Eastern Standard.
Yeah.
All right.
So. I mean, you know, coming into this game...
Yeah, it's perfect for the show.
We all know what's going to happen. You know, the pregame is going to show the Seattle fans being really loud and boisterous. They're going to come out with some crazy tifos. There's going to be a pretty packed stadium. And then when it comes down to the game on the field, I think based off of what we saw in the first game, it's going to be pretty choppy. And it's going to be a lot of... Both teams tried to have a very attack-heavy game in the first leg, and it was shut down perfectly, brilliantly by the defensive teams. I think that both teams played really solid defense. You know, Zach Lloyd, Matt Hedges, Chad Marshall, they all did great. I think this game, though, both teams are going to be looking to, you know, throw everything at them. So I'm actually expecting a very entertaining, relatively high-scoring game here. And honestly, I think that because of that, and because of the away goal rule, it's going to end up in Dallas's favor. Honestly, I would not be surprised at all if Dallas somehow were able to upset Seattle on Monday.
Yeah, if you would ask me this question 3, maybe even 4 weeks ago, I would have laughed at you if you had said to me that Dallas has a chance.
Yeah.
But after watching Dallas over the last couple of weeks and to really watch them take off as playoff contenders and, you know, to be perfectly honest, championship contenders, like, they really have that ability. And even if they don't do it this year, I think that in the next 3-4 years, I mean, give or take how the team chemistry changes if people leave, that team's going to be a contender every single year. They're so young, they're so talented, and they have the ability to bring in big names that Dallas absolutely has a chance to pull the upset on Seattle.
I would love to see it, too. I would really think it would be a feather into the cap of a guy like Oscar Pereja, first-year coach for Dallas, came over from Colorado last year, completely different system, with a completely different crop of players, and has pulled together a bunch of homegrown guys, and then has gotten the most out of Tesho Akindele. And then you think about Mauro Diaz, Fabian Castillo, Michel.
The list goes on.
It is an absolute, I think it's a huge success for Dallas this year that they were to get this type of season out of this team from Oscar Pereja, and it only spells good things for the future.
Yeah, and honestly, selfishly,
I hope people realize how good that is what they got down there in Dallas.
Yeah, no, it's incredible, and I hope that they continue to play well, and I'm really excited to see them grow even more. Let's just not forget, this is their first season.
Right.
So, like, we can still see this team get to new heights in new levels. And selfishly, I want to say that I would relish the idea of a Western Conference final between RSL and FC Dallas, because I think that would be an unbelievably entertaining matchup, personally.
Yeah, and then if you're looking pie in the sky. Well, first off, before we even look pie in the sky, you got to look at the ground, and then you would say, what does that spell for teams like LA and Seattle? What does that say about what they were able to do in the regular season and what they're not able to do in the postseason? And how does it really say that this year was a success for either team if you're getting bounced out in the semifinals of the Western Conference? Because last year was not a success for New York, even though they won the Supporters' Shield. Many of the fans were very pissed off that you got bumped out by Houston the way you did.
Thanks for reminding me.
No problem. Any other reminders you want? Columbus in 06?
No. You can just go ahead and
Newcastle,
seal your port.
Capital One Cup.
Moscow yesterday.
Okay. Let's get back to reality here. Snap back to reality. Yes, I just pulled Slim Shady on a Thursday. I don't even remember what we were talking about.
We were talking about the disappointingness of New York, of Seattle and LA, if they were to lose to Salt Lake and Dallas.
So one of the things that I was thinking about is that sometimes in football and in sports in general, the results towards a playoff type of series, and one of the interesting things about playoffs that makes it difficult compared to the league structure that you have in Europe and in other leagues around the world, is that it sometimes heavily favors teams that are hot. And it doesn't necessarily benefit those that have been consistent for a whole season. You know, if the league ended, Seattle wins the league, and they clearly were the best team throughout the entirety of the year. But you know what? We have a playoff structure. So a team like New England that had a series of losses, Dallas that weren't the best, that just got into it, you know, Vancouver that just got into it, all those teams would be absolutely obsolete. You know, those would be your, you know, 7, 6, and 5 seeds, essentially, in your league. So I really do say that the result of something in which LA and Seattle could go out is simply the structure of way we choose victors here in America.
Jeff Lemieux from RevolutionSoccer.net is going to join us in a couple of minutes to break down the Revs in Columbus a little bit more. But real quick before we go to break, let's talk about the MLS Disciplinary Committee's decision to fine Jones for an undisclosed amount for simulation in the 70th minute on Saturday. It was when Lee Wynn scored his goal to put the Revs up 3-1, and I didn't think it was this is something to be warranted as a fine. You know, we'll talk about it more with Jeff. I mean, Waylon Francis was given a yellow for, you know, bringing Jones to the ground like that, but, you know, Jones is making tough plays, and I've said it before, this guy is getting focused in on a lot in this league. So it doesn't shock me that you see him go down in situations like that, because he's got three guys that he carries on his back when he's making plays up the field sometimes. You go back to the Montreal game, for example, when Montreal was playing back here against the Revs, and you got Davies scoring the goal straight down the heart of the defense, but who makes the play? It's Jermaine Jones carrying three guys on his freaking back. It's happened before, MLS Disciplinary Committee. Why are you coming at Jones now? That's my question.
Yeah, I don't know. Me and Will just watched the video.
Watched it a million times, and I'm trying to figure out the fine.
Yeah, I don't get it. To me, it's a smart play by Jermaine Jones. I mean, there's contact with Francis. He definitely throws a high elbow. Does Jermaine Jones go down a little easy? Yeah, but like I said, it's a smart play in that situation, because what it does is draws attention to the actual foul. Jermaine Jones should not be penalized, or in this case, fined for pointing out the error. Like, maybe a ref doesn't catch that if Jones doesn't drop.
Also, one of the things that I noticed in that video is that there was a clear, like, attempt to inhibit his ability to get at the ball. I think it was Tony Chani, right? That was Tony Chani that was right in front of him. He wasn't looking at the play. He was looking at Jermaine Jones specifically, which in my mind warrants a foul in and of itself. Did he dive? Yes. But then again, I understand. See, this brings me back to this whole argument about diving and its place in the sport. I understand the reasons, the purposes, and the scenarios in which diving makes sense in a footballing game. And I also understand why so many people hate it. I mean, the thing is that it's a part of the game. Yes, that's hard to admit, but then again, it makes sense in certain situations. You know, it's all about taking advantage of you know, taking advantage of certain situations. You know, we do it all the time in other sports. You know, you give the ball to, you know, a mismatch in basketball, or you give it to, you throw it to a wide receiver who's mismatched with like a linebacker or something. You know, in every single sport, you take advantage of scenarios, and that's basically the representation of this in soccer. You're taking advantage of a clumsy act by an opposing player, and you simulate a little bit to try and get a call to put your team in the best position. I don't see much wrong with this.
Brian, final thoughts before we go to break.
I mean, I just said it. Like, I view it as a smart play. He pointed it out. I mean, there's no reason to elbow someone who's 20 yards away from the play. It's stupid.
Right. Yeah.
Just stupid play.
We'll talk with Jeff Lemieux of Revolution Soccer up next, and then we will give our final playoff thoughts of the weekend.
Jiggity Jeff.
And we've got some pitch invasions gone wrong for you. Again. Trust me, we're going to be looking out for this stuff all the time now. You people out there, if you're going to invade us on the pitch, you got to make sure you're doing it right. We'll be back with more after this. Go nowhere.
Buying or renting? Then deal with the most trusted realty group in Quincy. I'm talking about none other than Marina Bay Realty Group, located at 333 Victory Road in the heart of Marina Bay. Marina Bay's fantastic realtors will help you find your next residence without distress, whether you're looking for a high-rise apartment or a home for your new family. Marina Bay Realty Group has you covered. Call David Bouya today at 617-471-3070. Again, that's 617-471-3070.
Want something different for dinner tonight? Then check out Papagayo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. With four locations across the metro Boston area, Papagayo's is the perfect restaurant for a party of two or 20. So come and have a burrito or a signature taco, and don't miss the New England Revolution post-match report on 1510 WUFC. View the menu now at papagayoboston.com. That's P-A-P-A-G-A-Y-O Boston.com.
You're listening to the Pitch Invaders Podcast. And now, let's jump to the Allied Healthcare Insurance Hotline with Jeff Lemieux of RevolutionSoccer.net. Be sure to follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff_Lemieux. Here's your host, Tom Quinlan.
Yes, Pitch Invaders Podcast, welcome on back. Brian Speaks, Will Blasini in studio as well. We're going to get now to the Allied Healthcare Insurance Hotline and welcome in, I told you, our special guest that we were very excited to have back on our show.
Special guest.
Jeff Lemieux. Hello.
Hey, guys. You should be very excited to have me on. Thank you for that introduction. It was lovely.
Now, is that smug Jeff speaking or regular Jeff speaking?
No. Well, I mean, most of the time it's one and the same, but that was, I think I put a little extra smug in there for you.
We'll leave that was time, content, you know? Jeff. Very content Jeff.
Yeah.
What happened to smug Jeff, by the way, real quick, because I haven't seen many Twitter posts from that account recently.
Hey, I mean, it ain't me. It ain't me who's behind the Smug Jeff account. Unfortunately, I know who is, which takes a lot of the fun out of it for me, but maybe I'll have to have a little conversation with I tried to stay out of it because I feel like it's not really my place. Smug Jeff's kind of a different part of my personality. Yeah. I wanted to keep that separate, but maybe I'll have to have a little conversation now that it's playoff time just to figure out what's going on there.
How's that beard coming in?
It's coming in pretty good now. It's getting a little scraggly. I mean, I see myself in the mirror every morning, and it's looking worse and worse, which I think is really the point of playoff beards.
All right, yeah, that's pretty much what people think about when they get into these types of things. But we're going to get into our playoff talk that we've been doing all day here on the pod, and that is just recapping what happened in Columbus a couple of days ago, and now looking forward to this weekend, 5 o'clock at Gillette Stadium, which should be a good finale to this first semifinals for the New England Revolution, you would imagine, after successfully pulling the win 4-2 in the first leg Saturday in Columbus, Ohio. Jeff, first off, before we start getting into the nitty-gritty stuff, the Jones find and everything, your thoughts on what was another good opening playoff start for the New England Revolution?
Yeah, I think the key was going into Columbus being unafraid to let that game open up a little bit. And I think you have to – there are a couple things that factor into that. One is the fact that that's just kind of the way that the Reds have played all season. There hasn't been a whole lot of going into games and sitting back and playing for results. This has been a do-or-die, all-or-nothing team all year. That's why they only had four draws. It's why they only had two draws on the road. They have been willing to go away from home and play their attacking brand of soccer, regardless of where they are. And now, with four-goal performance in Columbus on Saturday, the Reds have scored multiple goals in five of their last six road games. So that's something different than you typically see in this league, is a team willing to go on the road and open up. So I think that played into it a little bit, the fact that the Reds were able to go and do that. Then also you have the away goals rule factoring into it as well. That also, I think, played into the idea that the Reds were okay going on the road and playing that open style, knowing, yeah, if we give up a couple goals, it's not going to be the end of the world if we're able to put a few past Columbus as well and come home with some road goals. Because you look at the results on Saturday, a 2-0 win in that Columbus game would have been fantastic. A 4-2 win is actually immeasurably better because of the four road goals you get. So I think the Reds were okay playing that style.
Yeah, and then if you score one here in New England on Sunday, Jeff, just to build on what you're talking about here, Columbus would in turn would have to score four. So the Revs are in a much better position this time around than they were last year. And they were in a pretty good position last year, heading back to Kansas City up 2-1, where they would eventually lose to the eventual MLS Cup champions. How does this team, New England, now look opposed to last year when, I mean, it's amazing. We talked about the other day how much a year makes a difference. Last year, the Red Sox are celebrating a World Series trophy, and then later that night you got Kellen Rowe telling people on Twitter to make sure they go from Lansdowne to Foxborough to show up to watch the team play against Sporting Kansas City. And, you know, obviously the Revs are bounced out of the Eastern Conference semifinals, but you don't got that same feel this time around. So what's different about this year, Jeff?
Yeah, I talked to Andrew Farrell about this yesterday, and I asked him about that experience that they had last year in that series with Sporting Kansas City, because it is similar in a way that, yes, last year and this year, the Reds are now going into the second leg of the Eastern Conference semifinals with a lead to hold on to and to protect. It's a lot different in the sense that last year was a one-goal lead going on the road to a team who was favored to beat you anyway, to as now this year you're coming home with a two-goal lead against a team who is lower than you in the you know, standings and is quote-unquote not supposed to beat you. So there are different elements to it, but I do think that experience last year is going to help this team coming into this game. You've got most of the same players with obviously a few key additions, but most of the guys who were on that team last year and had that experience in Kansas City are still with this team now and playing key roles. And I just think that experience is going to play a role on Sunday, and not only the experience of playing that game, but losing that game. Andrew Farrell talked about that feeling has stayed with this team of last year, going into Kansas City, just needing a result to move on to the Eastern Conference Championship and letting it slip away and not getting that result. And I know these guys do not want to feel that again, particularly at home on this field at Gillette Stadium on Sunday. And I think that serves as, obviously you don't need much more motivation when you're in the playoffs, but when you can hold on to something like that and hold on to like that bitter feeling of getting knocked out of the playoffs in that scenario, I think it serves even as more of a motivating factor the next year.
So how has Coach Jay Heaps tried to show that motivating factor without these guys getting lost in the mix of things and not letting their emotions get the best of them? Because we know one thing that is sure to come. It's probably going to be a very chippy game come Sunday between Columbus and New England because of the situation that Columbus is in right now. They're going to need to do anything and everything to throw the Revs off their game. So how does Jake keep these guys focused?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult line to walk in the playoffs, right? The intensity is always going to be ratcheted up in the postseason. That's just kind of the way playoff games are, and you need to bring your game and your intensity to that level. But you need to bring it as high as you can without going over the line and picking up a bunch of yellow cards or red cards, because as it stands, you pick up two yellow cards in the first three games of the playoffs, and you're suspended for a game. Yeah. So there really is a tight line to walk. But I think what Jay has done is just keep these guys focused on the task at hand as far as playing their game each and every game. And it really has been, you know, it's cliche, but it has been working for them so much this year, every week, to just say, it's one game at a time, it's one half at a time, it's one play at a time. We're going to focus on what's right in front of us because that's what we can control right now. And I think that is what Jay Heaps has done throughout the entire regular season and into the playoffs. I mean, his postseason press conference last week, he was asked to give an opening statement, and the first words out of his mouth were one game at a time. I mean, that is that is what they have done all season, and they're not going to stop doing that now.
Yeah, and it's been a formula to success for this team this year. But one thing that with every success, you always have every, you know, no matter what, there's always little kinks in the armor every now and then. But you look at Jermaine Jones, for example, and guys that you would like to see stay focused. He got fined for some simulation caused last weekend in Columbus. Now, you know, we don't care about how much the guy's going to get fined. I mean, he got paid pretty well, so he's going to be able to handle the chump change. But the overall perception of New England and Columbus right now, is it out there that, you know, Jermaine Jones is flopping and embellishing a little bit more because it has been an aggressive start for him in MLS with the way players have focused on him? Or is this just a matter of circumstance here where, you know, Jones just did something that MLS didn't like?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is an isolated incident. I don't think that this was, you know, cumulative, that the league thinks that they've seen Jermaine Jones flopping all over the place, so they decided to give him a fine in this instance. I mean, personally, from my perspective, I'm not seeing that. I mean, I think a lot of the comments you've seen from people saying, oh, Jones was diving all over the field, he deserved the fine, are coming from Columbus Crew fans, which you would expect. I mean, that's the fans, yeah, that you would expect those types of comments to come from.
And just real quick to build on that, too. And just real quick to build on that, too. I think you remember, Jeff, you saw it in person more in Columbus. It looked like the Columbus fans were really getting on the refereeing for not calling fouls against New England.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what you expect home fans to do, right? I mean, that's kind of what they're there to do. You want to take it to a certain level. There's, yeah, a line you don't want to cross, but that's kind of partially what the home fans are there for, is to get, you know, do what they can to try to influence the game on the field to a certain level. So you can't blame Columbus fans for getting on the ref and saying, hey, you know, we want calls to go our way. That's kind of why they're there. But I mean, I just don't know. That incident in particular, to me, I don't know if it's my Revs colored glasses, but I don't think I'm seeing it the way that a lot of the Crew people are seeing it.
Yeah, I also want to say that in the context, though, of this game, it was unbelievably physical. There was 32 fouls called. It was very choppy. I'm expecting probably something, if not more, from the game this weekend. So I almost feel like the dive might have been a bit of a reaction to what was happening on the field and the lack of calls. Maybe it was an attempt to try and get some sort of reaction from the ref, because the game was getting pretty out of hand. And there were moments where I was thinking to myself, well, this game could see a lot of cards. Are we expecting to see a lot of cards in this game weekend?
I mean, I'd expect it again to be physical, but I think you got to think guys are going to be try to be smart at the same time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, with the Jones incident, it's a little bit of that, the chicken and egg situation, right? Where you say, well, yep, Jones goes down, maybe he goes down easy, the contact to his chest. But it's one of those situations where you say you don't want guys to go down easy, but also guys have noticed and learned throughout the course of their careers that sometimes, unfortunately, if they don't go down, they're not going to get a call. So it's tough on guys to be in those situations, and there are a lot of situations where they can keep their feet and probably should keep their feet, but they've learned from experience that if they don't go down, they're not going to get a call. So they're left in this impossible situation of, well, do I stay up and not get a call, or do I go down and risk being told I went down too easy? It's a tough situation for the guys.
Jeff Lemieux, RevolutionSoccer.net, joining us right now. Jeff, the opponents here in this playoffs, we've talked about it a lot on this podcast, and I'm sure you've talked a lot about it on yours, Far Post Podcast. Follow them on Twitter as well, at Far Post Podcast. But the matchups between teams, it's been pretty even. Do you think that New England has muscled its way into being the more dominant team so far?
I mean, it's only one leg in the playoffs, so obviously it's still really early, but
right,
if you're looking at that as your sample size, I don't think there's any question that the Revs looked like one of the better teams, if not the best team, through the first leg of the conference semifinals. I mean, right now, if you're looking at a team who's going to make a run in these playoffs as a team who is playing well and in form right now, I don't see how there's a team you know, how the Revolution can't be a team who has just as good a chance as anybody else in this postseason.
Who do you think the Revs are better off seeing if they're able to get past Columbus?
Red Bulls.
I mean,
of course you're going to say that. You're a damn Red Bulls fan. I'm sorry, Jeff.
No, I mean, it's tough. It's tough looking at because both of these teams, look, right now, New York looked very good against D.C. in the first leg of their conference semifinal. Obviously, they're on a little bit of a run right now, having to take out Kansas City twice, once at the end of the regular season and then once in the play-in game. So New York is playing very well right now, but D.C. has been so stingy all season. So I do think both of those matchups would be very, very difficult matchups, which you would expect coming into the Eastern Conference Championship. But from a Revs perspective, I guess, or from my perspective, if you're looking at those two teams, I guess you're thinking, well, if it's New York, then the Revs are the higher seed, have the advantage of having the second leg at home. So maybe from a Revs perspective, and if you're a Revs fan, that's what you look for, just because that gives the Revs that advantage of having the second leg at home.
Yeah, but do you
that
think
that sounds good to me?
Yeah, I know.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like the idea of a Revs New York game for the finals.
Regionally,
like
it'd work
that.
Great. Like I've said before, there isn't a real Boston New York rivalry right now. I mean, New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox is dead. Celtics Knicks is nothing. Bruins Rangers is nothing. Bruins Islanders, whatever you want, have it. So I mean, this could be a real good jumping ground for a regional rivalry here. I still think, though, Jeff, that DC might not be the best team in this Eastern Conference. What do you think about New England going up against United and what problems they could present?
Yeah, I mean, DC is the type of team who plays, I mean, they're not the type of team that's going to run up the score on you, really. They're the type of team that's playing those gritty, close games where it's going to be 1-0, it's going to be 2-1,
right.
And anytime you get a team like that, they're going to be in the series with you. So, I mean, they're just different types of challenges that the Reds would have to go up against should they get past Columbus on Sunday. Obviously, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but yeah, I mean, you look at the regular season meetings, it's tough because the Revs didn't play either New York or D.C. late in the season when they brought Jermaine Jones in and really started to kind of turn things around towards the end of the season. So I think you'd just see completely different matchups with both New York and D.C. as opposed to what you saw in the regular season.
All right, he's Jeff Lemieux of RevolutionSoccer.net. How do you like the way these playoffs have been going so far?
They've been fun, you know. I mean, I didn't get to see the first leg of the RSL-LA game. We were on our way back.
You didn't miss much.
I was a little disappointed, too, with the FC Dallas-Seattle game. It wasn't the prettiest game, I guess. But it's they've all kind of set up for really, really entertaining second legs, as, you know, they kind of tend to do when you play these two-game aggregate goal series with away goals and stuff. There's just a lot of intrigue in all the games. You know, with the two Western Conference series, both of those are level going into the second games, and now, you know, you've got a DC team hosting New York who needs to go out and score goals. You've got Columbus coming to New England. They need to score goals, so it should set up for a pretty fun weekend of soccer.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And then on top of that, you got the European stuff in the morning as well. Like, come on, this is nonstop around the clock.
Yeah.
I love it. He's Jeff Lemieux of RevolutionSoccer.net. Make sure you listen to the Far Post podcast before you walk into Gillette Stadium this Sunday night, 5 o'clock on ESPN. If you're not going to be in Foxborough that evening. Jeff, before we let you go, actually, what's your favorite nachos? It's National Nacho Day.
My favorite nacho?
On the spot. Now I'm really putting you on the spot. You thought I put you on the spot before.
Yeah, I mean, I do just like throwing some chicken on my nachos and making a meal out of it. I can do that. I can eat nachos with chicken and make it a full meal.
So just chicken and chips, no cheese.
Well,
nothing else?
I mean, obviously all the other regular toppings on there, but I'm not a jalapeno guy. I'm taking the jalapenos out.
All right, that's cool with me. That's cool with me, Jeff. All right, brother, we'll be talking.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jeff. Dankeschön, Jeff. Dankeschön.
We need to say that after every interview we have with somebody.
Dankeschön.
Yeah, it really loses its.
Auf Wiedersehen.
It wasn't that cool the first time.
No, it really wasn't. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's more weird now.
You guys have no love for that amazing song.
What song was that? What movie was that in?
Do you not like Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
There we go.
Are you Americans?
We are Americans.
Then you should like Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Sunday. I never said I didn't.
Hey, I just saw this come across my Twitter. Fran Harrington, a great Midnight Rider, with
Fran.
You down there in the fort. Just retweeted somebody's tweet about there being a TIFO for Sunday. Is that real? Are we actually doing another TIFO?
Yep.
Two TIFOs in two home games?
Now we're just getting spoiled.
Guys. Yeah, now we're getting spoiled. Like,
watch out, Timber's Army. We're gunning for you.
I can't top that. What do we got? What do you have, like, a little inside information on this? You guided us to the Africa last time.
Yeah.
So what do you got for us this time?
This one, also steeped in the 80s. Not a song reference, a horror movie reference.
Dun-dun.
Shut up. Yeah. So yeah, you'll see it on Sunday. It should be around the same, the same specs as the last one. So it should go as smooth as the other one. And, yeah, that's what, shut the F up. I'm going to kick you.
You know what it is? You're a Red Bulls fan, so you don't care about what the people in New England get to cherish,
that's
right?
That's not true at all. I care deeply about the place that
I live in. New Haven. You're on the line. You're
a New
Yorker.
I don't live in New Haven. I live here in I live in Newton. Chestnut Hill. Represent, yo. Damn,
know.
Son. Why y'all fronting?
You seem to have a Connecticut license plate on your car.
Yeah. I do. And you know what? It got me a ticket last night, even though I had a full amount of money in the meter.
The full
very
amount
of money. Yeah, the 2 hours that you're allotted in the Brookline area.
T-fo'd out of our freaking minds here, folks. So that's happening there. Real quick, moving over to other soccer stuff, because this is a full soccer show, not just on the New England Revolution.
Wait, what?
Yeah, no, we actually
really?
We do all everything, but we've been wrapped
Brian,
in playoff stuff.
Have we ever talked about other things besides?
I think we
MLS
spent more time talking about the Western Conference than we did the Reds. So yeah,
that's fair enough.
We at least are MLS based, but
we're at least MLS based, but soccer based.
Can we go abroad for a moment?
Man City
it's
sucks.
A long trip.
I said it. We are not built to win Europe. We're not going to win England this year. We're lucky to finish in the top four. This is a team that has spent a lot of money to replicate what its counterpart has done on the other side of Manchester, and they can't do it for three reasons. One, your star player doesn't want to play for you anymore. Two, there is no consistency at all. All with how Manuel Pellegrini plays in big games. And three, the people in Manchester simply don't give a damn about the white and blue.
Okay, all right. So first things first, you can really just tune the dial down a bit with your doomsday talking, because comparing yourself to Manchester United, you do realize that they spent the years from 1986, when Ferguson took office.
I get that, and they're trying to expedite that process.
They're trying to expedite it, but you can't expedite success over 25 years.
Well, that's
you can't just be like, ha-ha, we're there now.
Well, that's what they did.
It takes 25
That's what
years.
They're trying to do.
That's what they're trying to do, but it takes time.
And they don't
How
realize
that. How many championships
that?
Have they won over the past couple of years?
Two.
Exactly.
In 3 years.
That's a pretty good start.
And but hold on.
Stop being selfish. Stop trying
is
to
there
make
a reason
City
for them
amazing
to be, is
overnight.
There a reason for them to take ownership of two more clubs when they've got to just worry about Manchester City right now? Is there any reason for them to be focusing on other areas in the transfer market that they don't need? Like strikers.
Yeah. Obviously. Do you want to see a formula?
I'd rather see us have a better center back with company.
Hold up.
They don't have a good center back pairing back there.
Here's the response,
tell me that
though.
DeMichelis is better than Hummels.
Here's the response, though, to going out and getting things you don't need. Take a look at this little team that wears a lot of blue called Chelsea. Their C team could easily be mid-table in EPL. They have an unbelievable line of players, and you know what? They're pretty damn good.
But who was the first person to come in and spend money in EPL? Who was the first owner in EPL history to spend the money that Manchester City's spending now? The guy that owns that team in Little Blue Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? They've been doing it for a while. My point is that you can't just jump from... You can't go 0 to 100 real quick, okay?
You can't.
You can't. It doesn't make sense.
I think we agree on that.
You can go 0 to 100 in, you know, as long as it takes to get to 100, you know, count or something.
But isn't the focus should be for Man City fans right now to do better in Europe, to do better on an international stage, because it's an absolute failure right now for the past... Three out of the four seasons that they've had the success that they've had, to only finish either in the round of 16 or just get to the dance.
All right.
Like it's like America in the World Cup. That you're excited, you're hopeful for the opportunities,
listen.
And then you get to the thing and you realize, oh, we're really not that set up to win this thing.
All right, so here's my response. Should they be focusing on Europe? I don't think that they have to, And the reason why is that if you look at the course of Sir Alex Ferguson's career at Manchester United, if you want to compare it to them, because that's what they're trying to be, Sir Alex Ferguson and Manchester United, they didn't even win their first European, they didn't even win the European Cup under his tenure until 1998.
And that was against Bayern.
What?
That was against Bayern, right, when they won the treble?
Maybe. I don't remember. Yeah, actually it was. Yeah, you're right. And they won the EPL League in 2002, 2003, 2005, 2006, and then in 2008 they won this. So they won three or four leagues before they even got to Europe. You can't just win two leagues and think, oh yeah, we're so deserving of the CL trophy. Let's go. We deserve to be there. That doesn't mean anything, because you know what? In almost all the other teams that vie for that trophy every single year, those teams have been winning consistently for decades. And that's why they get to the CL final, because they know how to be there. Manchester City is very, very new to European play, and there is a massive difference between playing in England and playing against other teams in Europe. It's apples to oranges. It's uncomparable. No matter how much success you have in England, that will never translate into Europe unless you've gotten your European licks, which Manchester City have not. And that is exactly why in the past couple seasons in the CL, we've seen them flame out. We've seen them get dogged by other teams, because they're not. It's a completely different beast.
I don't disagree with any of that. I just think the way the bravado is set up right now by the ownership group is that they're speaking too much. And maybe now they're catching themselves with their foot in their mouth. So that's my thought on Manchester City.
They've had both feet in their mouth for a while.
Yeah. Raul's scoring record, as Brian so eloquently and perfectly put a couple of weeks ago, he's going to be turning into the Hank Aaron of soccer eventually, because Ronaldo and Messi are just going to blow 71 out of the water. I mean, when you look at what what Messi and Ronaldo have been able to do on the Champions League stage, it's staggering. They're going to finish with over 100 goals in the Champions League history, which is an unbelievable amount of goals. And, you know, we live in the LeBron James versus Michael Jordan era right now. Like, if this was ever a moment in sports to compare the two greatest players of all time and have a definitive answer, now we have that time. And now,
I would say that when their careers are over, we'll be able
to say. Yeah, well, okay, fine. That's the perfect way of saying that.
Greatest. And because right now, let's not forget, as Brian and I were talking, that, you know, we were talking about this way before the show even started, that these guys are still in the primes of their career,
scary.
Which is the most amazing thing. Ronaldo is 28, I think, and Messi is 27. So these guys still have 4 or 5 seasons left, maybe 4 seasons left, of their prime level of football. So we're not going to be able to tell who's the best out of these two until the very end. But you know what? As Brian said before, it's kind of underwhelming when these things happen, because they're just seem to happen with these two all the time. You know, it's amazing, yes, that they do it, but it's almost become like a ritual that, oh yeah, this season, a new season rolls around, a new record of some kind is broken by one of these two guys, or as Brian said earlier, okay, so one of them breaks it, which means probably the following season the other one's going to break his record.
Yeah, I mean, I really have said so much without actually saying anything.
But, I know.
It's amazing when you have other people speaking for you, right?
I apologize for regurgitating words.
I'm like a Svengali over here. Yeah. I'm not impressed with Messi tying the record yesterday. It was a nice moment. You know, it was a nice goal, but it doesn't matter. He's 27 years old. He's going to get probably 5 or 6 more goals in the championship, in the Champions League this year. And Ronaldo's probably going to do the same. So it's not that impressive when you think of it on the spectrum. Yes, they beat an all-time great who is now on the New York Cosmos.
Oh, thank God.
Cosmos. you know, so yes. I'm so excited for
Brian,
that.
You're getting a little hot in the pants.
It's so awesome that they're able to do that. You know, they broke the record. But that thing is that record is going to get broke consistently over the next 10 years from I feel like not even just Messi and Ronaldo are going to be there. I feel like Karim Benzema, who has 25 goals now, and he's like 23, he's going to be in the Champions League every single year until the day he retires. He's going to be on a top-level team forever, the same way Ronaldo and Messi are. Yeah. And, you know, eventually Raul will be next to, like, he'll just fade into obscurity because no one's going to remember his name, sadly.
Champions, I wouldn't say that. I think that's a little harsh.
When it comes to records, it is.
When it comes to records, but I mean, if you were to pinpoint the success of Madrid's Champions League season so far in 2014, you have to point to Karim Benzema because, I mean, he's been doing all... I mean, Ronaldo has done a lot, but Benzema's been doing just as well and has been just as efficient for Real Madrid through their group stages, and they're going to advance easily. There's no question about it. Champions League group stages return on November 25th. Moscow host Roma, City host Bayern.
Nine men. See, this goes back to my point. CSKA Moscow is a team that has been in Europe for a lot longer than City. Sure, they don't have the same lineup,
and it's Russia.
Is completely different.
It's Russia.
So that doesn't matter.
You say that with so much contempt, like the Russian league's awful.
Yeah.
The Russian league's a
it's not Germany.
It's a highly competitive league with a ton of world class players.
Fair enough. All right.
There's a reason why Russia is a 4.5 star in FIFA.
No. I'm being facetious. Yeah. I'm not being fair. I'm being a dick to this morning.
You're being bitter because shitty is shitty.
Shitty is shitty.
Shitty's being shitty.
Sorry, kids. All right. Final thoughts on the show before we go. Pitch invasion gone wrong. Yep. Now Brian has gone literally through the annals of pitch invasion's histories.
Annals.
Yeah.
Annals.
You might want to say that correctly, Tom.
I have not gone through the annals of any history.
Especially, all right, so.
The annals,
you know
whatever.
Okay, I need some help here. Neil, you got to get on Tom for his pronunciation of that word, because, good Lord, if I am pronouncing Bobby Shuttleworth.
Sorry.
Take the cork out of your mouth.
I'm trying to take the cork out, but you got to get on him for saying anals.
Annals.
God. All right. Anyway, so what
give
we
us,
were
give me, give me,
to go
yeah,
for
give me your pitch, in, pitch invasion gone wrong of the week.
So during a Wellington Phoenix versus Melbourne game, yes, we are going all the way down under to Australia.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing down under. So
go to Outback Steakhouse
on the
tonight.
Southeast coast, and basically, you know, seabirds are just around the coastline. That's what seabirds do. They chill on coastlines. So during the game, right after a goal, the birds decided to invade the pitch, and they basically were flying everywhere, pooping on everything. It was one of the most amazing things ever, and I remember the first time I saw that, I thought of a quote from The Birds by Alfred Hitchcock. Why are they doing this? Why are they doing this? They said that when you get here, the whole thing started. Who are you? Who are you? Where did they come from? I think because of all this, I think they're evil. Evil!
Evil!
Okay. That can cease to exist, that squeal. Anyways, yeah, sorry for that random off-topic quote, but we love pitch invasions here. I would actually say that this is a pitch invasion gone right. I think that is perfectly okay.
You're okay with people being pooped on?
Yes, I'm okay with a block of seagulls invading a football game. Do you know how amazing that... How often does that happen?
And I'm just okay with a flock of seagulls.
Yeah,
me too.
It's
Throwback Thursday.
Yeah, it's throwback. So. Here come the goals!
What do we got for predictions this weekend, boys? Who's going through? We'll start off with New York and Columbus.
New York and Columbus.
New England and Columbus.
I was going to say.
New England's going through.
New England's going through?
Yep.
You think?
Columbus has to beat the Revs by three or more goals or score five away goals.
You can't even act like this is a discussion.
I don't want to say.
There's nothing to talk about.
I don't want to say it's a layup, but.
It's a layup.
It's a layup. I mean,
it's a layup with your left hand when you're a righty.
Yes.
We'll say that.
Yes.
It might be difficult, but it's accomplishable.
It's a layup, but Shaq's in the post somewhere.
Yeah, Shaq is wandering.
And you don't really know where, so he could come out of any direction at any time.
Yeah.
And this
and
is
when
like,
he swats you, he could take down the basket yourself, and you could
and
die.
This is Shaq pre-Icy Hot commercial, so he's on point.
So you with New England, too?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Okay, so then New York, then we're all saying, too? Without a shadow of a doubt?
No. That's a bit closer.
It's definitely more obtainable. Listen, I think that New York will win.
Besides the win that we had against them this past weekend, we've only beaten them once in playoff history ever, whereas they've beaten us six times. So there's a very high probability that DC come back and win. Do I want it to happen? Obviously no. Do I think it'll happen? Probably not. But it could.
All right. West Coast. With going to California.
That is not the way the song goes. It's I know. Going back to LA. All right. So, anyways, between LA and RSL, I am going to have to call the unbelievable upset of the Real Salt Lake.
I have to go with RSL too, just because I understand the importance of the away goal. If RSL scores twice, that means LA. If RSL scores once, LA has to score twice. That is huge.
And based off of the fact that LA only had three shots against RSL in the last game, what makes them think that they will have a similar success this time around?
Yeah.
So that's the way the cookie crumbles. Yeah.
I won't be shocked if LA wins, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah,
I mean, everyone expects LA to win, but honestly, I actually think, though, that RSL wins that game.
I'm taking LA in this one, but I will say my upset special will be Dallas over Seattle.
Upset special indeed. I hope to see it. I think it's very possible. I think that, you know, when it comes to the two West Coast games, that game's going to be the most entertaining one. Seattle has the away goal, which means Dallas is going to have to push extra hard going forward. So we're going to see them possibly at their tip-top creative best, which, you know what? When Dallas is doing that, they are on fire and they are unstoppable and they are a gorgeous team to watch when they are at their creative best.
Yeah, I think LA is going to win, but I it's not a given. I think that both the West Coast games are going to be really exciting to watch because they could go either way. So those are definitely my two games of the week.
So you got RSL in Seattle?
I got RSL in Seattle.
Okay. Right.
Cool. It's the Pitch Invaders podcast. Follow these gentlemen on Twitter. Will Blasini's at Willy Football. Brian Speaks is Brian _ Speaks.
The ginger beard.
The ginger beard. Shout out to all our Twitter followers. Also, it is National Nacho Day, so real quick, go around the room, tell me your favorite nachos dish. Go.
Okay, nachos, cheese, beans, mango salsa, and also some carne, some sort of beef that has been sauteed
carne
for an
asada.
Entire day. Not carne asada.
I like a mixture of blue and red chips.
Ooh.
With some nice spicy cheese, jalapeno, sour cream. I'm going to go with the mango salsa, too. But I want that on the side. I hate how salsa makes your nachos all gooey and wet.
Right.
That's why you got to crisp them beforehand.
Still,
you put
too much
them with the cheese.
If it's a runny salsa, it's not going to matter.
You cook them with the cheese. You coat them bad boys in cheese, and then you put the salsa on afterwards. Heat it up a bit. Throw the meat that's been cooking separately on it. And good Lord, I am hungry. I'm about to be out. Peace.
Buffalo chicken dip.
Papagayos.
With nacho chips. That's me.
Papagayos.
Bump, 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 bump. Oh, no. Come on. I hate when that does that. All right. There
we
go.
Does that mean we have to redo?
No, we don't have to redo. It's the Pitch Invaders podcast. I'm Tom Quinn. The New England Soccer Weekly returns this Saturday with Justin Churchill and Sean Donahue. Brad Feldman at 12:20. And the post-game show returns Sunday night, 7:15 on 1510 WUFC. For all of us here, I'm Tom Quinn. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter at Podcast Invaders. And don't miss out on all the soccer action on 1510 WUFC. Till next time, this has been the Pitch Invaders podcast.
Brian, I just have to say that I really do think your haircut is amazing.
I think it's awful, but thank you.
I think it's beautiful. I think all I want to do is take my hand and just, like, caress the back of your head. Caress your crown. That's that Brian sound, like.